Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, I don't know about you, but I've been kind of following what has been reported about challenges with air travel, and specifically the Newark Airport. They have had some harrowing experiences there, and one has to ask whether the Newark Airport is the canary in the coal mine for the air travel industry. Many experts say yes, that it's a strong indication of things to come if we don't pay more attention. Lori Garrow, professor and an aviation expert at Georgia Tech, joins us. Lori, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Lori, is Newark the canary in the coal mine?
Well, Newark has some unique issues, but I think that it is highlighting some of the challenges, right, that our air traffic control system has due to, you know, age and limitations, just as over the decades more and more people have traveled.
Yeah. I was looking at the numbers of the growth of this industry, and they are mind-numbing. Over the last 10 to 15 years, the rate of growth, and obviously that growth is really stressing our system out.
Yeah, so, I mean, the good news is that air travel helps support the economy, helps people travel, gets our goods and, you know, medical equipment, organs for transplants, all those kind of things to places they need to go very quickly. But as the infrastructure has not been really able to keep up, so airlines can use some strategies like swapping out smaller aircraft for larger aircraft so that, you know, you're landing a big plane instead of a small plane at certain areas. But we've sort of reached we're reaching our capacity constraints.
There are predictions that by 2035, air traffic will increase up to 100%, meaning an extra 3.7 billion passengers that will need to be accommodated by airports around the world. When we look at ourselves here in the U.S. and compare ourselves to airports in other areas of the world, where do we actually stand from a technological standpoint, a throughput standpoint?
So technology-wise, I think many airports throughout the world are, you know, in the same boat, so to speak, looking at the, you know, older technologies for monitoring aircraft, doing air traffic control. You do have some countries that are more aggressively investing in their airport infrastructure, expanding gates, looking at how we're going to accommodate new aircraft types that might be electric for electric vertical takeoff and landing, you know, hydrogen-based planes, et cetera. So in terms of, you know, current operations, I'd say we're on par, but looking at maybe future technologies, a little bit behind, in my opinion.
There seems to be much disagreement as to what it's going to take and what it's going to cost to be able to improve the system. As an expert in this field, on a scale from 1 to 10, where would you put us? 10 being great, 1 being not so good?
Probably, again, on my opinion, I would say 3. And I think one of the more powerful statements that came out this morning from Sean Duffy, the Secretary of the Department of Transportation, is that, you know, he plans on going to Congress and asking for a multi-billion dollar investment to really, you know, rehaul, you know, our aging systems and some of the precursors of what was happening in Newark. So, you know, we're looking at understaffing of ATC, the air traffic controllers, as well as, you know, infrastructure that's been in place since the 70s and 80s. So looking forward, I'm hoping we can, you know, really modernize the think of more of a modular design, meaning, you know, we're not going to do the quickest solution now and then, you know, not be able to bring in new technologies, let's say 5 years from now when, you know, newer technologies come online. So, you know, I'd really like to see us get a nice infrastructure that's modular that lets us expand as the new technologies come online. So we're not in this boat again, you know, 20 to 30 years from now.
We're visiting with Lori Garrow, professor and aviation expert at Georgia Tech. Lori, we've been talking about the what. This is the outcome. Why do we find ourselves in this predicament? And if it's our structure, are there other areas, or do we have an example of a different structure that seems to be working great?
So why we're in this, I think, you know, boat to begin with is, you know, a combination of factors. Newark being, again, probably one example of, you know, multiple factors that came together. We do have a shortage of air traffic controllers, probably, I think it was quoted, 3,000 short. Part of that is COVID-related, as the DOT secretary pointed out this morning. So we have a training center in Oklahoma, similar to, you know, the airlines. I think the recovery post-COVID was just so fast, it was hard to ramp up that quickly. So the pipeline for, you know, new controllers is down. But then the other thing to keep in mind is that the airline industry as a whole, safety always comes first. And with that, we crawl to solutions, we don't run, because we don't want to make a mistake that, you know, inevitably leads to an accident. And so change tends to happen, I think, more slowly in aviation. And if you don't have, you know, continual funding or, you know, let's say a big influx, I do think it's, you know, somewhat easy, right, to find ourselves in the solution of, or predicament, I should say, of where we haven't really made changes over the last, you know, again, 50 years, older equipment. So it's probably changing that mindset and really doing, you know, a large investment, unfortunately, at this point, to make the improvements.
Yeah, I kind of asked that question because there was something that the Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said that's kind of scary. Said we're buying parts for these systems on eBay because you can't buy them new. There's no one manufacturing them. and it's kind of like, okay.
I mean, yeah, although that's also
not
a
very
problem.
Reassuring.
You know? Yeah, although I think that's also a common problem in like the automotive industry where you might have certain car models that get old and then you just stop reproducing them. So, but yeah, I hadn't heard that comment, but I mean, it does show just how old, let's say, the systems are and the fact they aren't being, you know, reproduced.
Well, most technological improvements, they have this thing that I called it planned obsolescence. In my previous life, I was a sheriff, and we'd have these radio systems. The day that they came out, they had already planned on when they were going to be obsolete, you know, and when they would stop supporting them, which I always just found a little bit curious. And obviously, their business model is they don't really want a product that's going to last for a lifetime. And I got to imagine it's the same thing in the aviation industry.
It is, although I would argue in some ways we do plan for larger horizons, right? Unlike a you know, car that we might replace every 7 years, a plane can last 30 or more years.
Correct.
Many of the systems were very good when they were built in the 60s and 70s for, you know, quickly processing transactions and, you know, providing consistency in the data that's also overlaid the safety aspect, right? You know, so fast transmission of information in ways that people can understand, you know, help survive, right? The pass of time. So I would say aviation does plan for longer horizons. And then again, it's sort of this, you know, I just view it as safety is always first. And so making change on a radio transmission, for instance, what's the worst that would happen if that, you know, if it wasn't obsolete when it was? Maybe you're delayed to a call, but like in aviation, if you make a mistake, lives are at stake, right? So when you are implementing new things, there's multiple layers of redundancy, longer testing that's really done to make sure that any new system or change is going to work and to maintain and or enhance the safety levels.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
I was surprised to hear that we don't have a high level of redundancy in our systems, and we're not utilizing satellite technology as much as I would have thought that we would have by creating regional redundant centers in case, you know, like in Newark the other day, you had a 90-second blackout where, you know, you could transfer to a standby unit that would cover like the Eastern Seaboard to take over communications and things of that nature utilizing satellites. I mean, it's done in the telecommunications industry in a big way. I was kind of curious why we haven't embarked on that, or maybe we have in the aviation industry.
So we are looking at it as well, right? And redundancy clearly in terms of, you know, extra centers, or that was part of the Newark problem, was they were transmitting data and the backup line was overwhelmed and failed. So there was at least redundancy planned. It's just, you know, both the primary and redundancy failed in Newark, which is why the screen went black there. Having said that, though, aviation, remember, you have multiple players. So like for the satellite technologies, for looking at putting new technologies on, part of it goes, let's say, on the government side, right, tracking the aircraft. But the second is you actually need sensors or information on the aircraft to be able to, you know, track them and consistency. And usually that's a airline investment to put on the aircraft versus the, you know, air traffic controllers is more of a government investment. So, again, you imagine now you have to build consensus among the airline industry on what those technologies are. And, you know, one of the arguments is that those that are the low-cost carriers are disproportionately harmed if they're investing, you know, a large part in the technology that's probably going to raise fares more than like a larger carrier that can absorb those technology enhancements better. So it's multiple players in my mind, you know, that all need to sort of come to a consensus and figure out how they're going to equitably distribute the costs for all of these enhancements and share the benefits.
If you had to bet on this, do we get there? You know, I didn't realize that we had these disparate issues as it relates with planes communicating with towers and things of that nature. How do we accommodate that now? I mean, if we have that challenge, I mean, there's not a standardized template by which we are communicating with
airplanes. So there is a standard template in which we're communicating with airplanes. But if we want to move to the newer technologies, again, we need those templates in place
and updating them, right?
So looking
right.
at it.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm optimistic. I think that in some ways, we don't have a choice, right? We're at the point where we need to modernize. More things are coming, right? If we, for instance, want to look at incorporating in new electric vertical takeoff and landing, which carriers such as United, Delta, and others, you know, are investing in to help do trips to the airport, or, you know, think about replacements for helicopters, that's going to put more traffic in the air. We need to basically make sure we're you know, going through and helping on that. So I think we've reached, I don't want to say a breaking point, but I think we've reached the point where we have met our capacity limitations, and, you know, technology is one way that we can help solve those constraints.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into this for certain as the traveler. I'm going to be going through Newark in the very near future. And
Are you making a connecting flight, or are you just stopping
in
Newark?
Yes, I am. I have a about a 6.5 hour layover. So
okay, that's smart. I was going to say, I hope you did more than 30 minutes.
Yeah. So I think the airline has already been making these modifications, right? And what was, I think, a 2.5 hour layover is now a 6.5 hour layover. So it seems as though the airlines themselves are taking remedial action on a number of their flights and the way that they're scheduling going in and out of Newark, because Newark, I think, is one of the busiest international airports on the Eastern Seaboard, right?
Yeah, it is a hub for United Airlines. And to that extent, they themselves voluntarily cut back flights into the airport. And then there's a meeting later this week that the DOT secretary called, where he's getting multiple airlines around the table to really discuss collaboratively how they can cut the number of departures back at Newark to, again, help while these shortages on the air traffic controllers are going on, because you can't process as many flights into and out of the airport if you're limited on your number of controllers.
So where would they do, Lori? They would divert to other airports? Are there others that have capacity?
So let's say you're United Airlines and you were flying international. You would be looking probably at doing those aircraft swaps would be the first one. So if you limit the number of flights in, the idea is that you try to carry as many passengers as you can into the airport, but using larger aircraft. So, that's the one thing is, can I, instead of taking my little tiny Prius to the airport as a way to think about it, can I take the big limousine that serves more? So that's one strategy they can look at. And then they could look at routing through different ones. So if you were coming from Florida to Newark to, let's say, going to Europe, they might look and see, can we fly you through Chicago instead? So looking at diverting over other airports or routing you through different connecting cities.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting process that this is going to go through. And how much of a problem, how much does a direct flight, like, from so many different airports into these major airports, does that contribute to this traffic situation that we have?
So it is not only the number of flights going in, but it's the number of flights that come in on a specific hour. So the way I like to think about it is, imagine you're a controller and you're helping make sure that the flights take off and land safely. And so it's, flights you're processing, right? So if you're looking at all these movements, it's a lot easier to manage, let's say, 10 flights an hour than it is 40, right? You get information overload. There's a point at which the controllers can't safely monitor all of the movements, or process in. So when you have, limited number of controllers, you need to reduce the number of flights so that you're within human capacity of being able to process the information and make sure things stay safe. So I don't know if that quite answered your question, but that's sort of how I'm viewing the problem.
It does. What's interesting, too, is that, most airports don't operate 24 hours a day. I mean, they typically, I think, 11 p.m. or midnight, you're not going to see many flights taking off or landing at that hour until about, 5 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. in the morning. And it's just, having managed a staff of over 1,700 at one point in time in my career, it's interesting that we just sat on the sidelines and watched this human capital dissipate in front of our eyes and not really have a plan to backfill. When you look at the numbers of growth annually in air travel, it's absolutely incredible. And I just can't imagine, why somebody would sit around and not try and resolve this issue. And why now? I mean, thankfully, Sean Duffy seems to be pretty aggressive on this issue. We've talked about it a lot, but didn't really see a whole lot of remedial action taking place.
So I think you have good insights on that, and you're asking the right questions.
Yeah. I say to my audience, call your congressman and congressperson. Put the pressure on them. I mean, I don't know, you know, well, I hate to, you know, I'm not going to ask you this question, but, you know, I won't put you on the spot, but it's like, you know, would you fly into Newark? I mean, we have a lot of folks that are doing that on our trip, and it's kind of like, I don't know. I mean, should we move it to somewhere else? You know, these are legitimate questions when they keep losing 90 seconds, blackout screens in multiple occasions, and you're wondering, you know, how do you manage this when you can't see anything?
And it's so, yeah, so I can respond on that. So two pieces of this is that, you know, like I went back beforehand, whenever, you know, I personally, whenever like a, you know, air traffic accident happens or there's serious delays, you know, I'm an anxious flyer. I get very anxious about, you know, getting on. If I were making a connection in Newark right now, yeah, I would. Exactly. If I were going through Newark right now, I would probably pick a different airport if I was making a connection, or like you, make sure I buffered a very long connection time to eliminate the stress. But having said that, again, Sean Duffy came out and said that on this particular Newark issue on why, you know, the screen went blank, that it was basically a data transmission issue, and they put a patch in, a software patch, to make sure that this backup line was not going to get overwhelmed, and it appears, I think he said, it is working. So I think that they are more confident that they have a solution, let's say, to the issues that were popping up. Of course, time will tell. But I keep reminding myself, aviation is the safest mode of travel. I mean, would you rather drive, you know, and take, you know, the risk of, you know, roadway accidents, or, you know, aviation accidents are much less frequent. And also, like I said before, they're designed with these huge safety buffers in place. So when the system went down, there were plans in place, right? They automatically started circling the aircraft. You always have a backup airport you can get to if you need to, you know, enough gas on board, fuel on board to do that. So aviation is planned with these huge safety margins in place. So when things do happen, we're able to keep you safe. So that's in my mind what I do, but I agree. I get nervous, and
the flip side,
I get nervous.
In all fairness to the system in general, the flip side is I'm not sure there's another airport getting as much attention as Newark right now. And
correct.
You know, I think there's an upside to that, right?
Well, there is, and like I mentioned before, Newark's a very unique case because the decision was made last summer to literally move where, let's say, the air traffic controllers are from New York to Philadelphia. But they kept one system that basically processes the radar feeds in New York, and that's where they need to transmit that data down to, like, the screens, right, that the controllers are looking at in Philadelphia. So that's not been done at another airport, so I wouldn't expect the issue to come up. But again, they thought they would have better luck staffing, you know, in Philadelphia than in the New York area. So
right,
cost of living and everything else that goes along with that. So in many ways, Newark, I think, is an isolated case, but it does highlight some of the challenges we have.
No doubt. Lori Garrow, professor and aviation expert at Georgia Tech, thank you so much for your time and your insight. Have a great week.
Yes, thank you for inviting me, and you too.
Thank you very much. We will be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us, folks.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.